Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Fantastic. I'm back.
You're
I'm
back home. From your vacation,
yes.
From your wanderings.
It was, I need a vacation because I'm exhausted now.
I knew it.
Well, I went to Nemrezek, hung out with family for a week, and so every day we did a little bit of something here, there, everywhere, and a lot of walking, hiking, and tripping, and a lot of food. Like, everybody took turns making some sort of meal, and so it was like big meals every day. So I gained a little bit of weight, but I also might have lost a little bit of weight, all the hiking. So
all evened out in the end.
Yes, it did. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very good to get back and see everybody all in one place.
Good weather?
The weather was fantastic. On just one of the days, like, it was pretty hot. It was 25, 28 degrees almost every day, except for one day where it rained overnight, really rained overnight, and then rained at about 9 a.m. So we had a nice relaxing day, and then sun came out, and so then we went off and did something, and so it was good. It was really, really good. Didn't get a chance. We had all the research we did recently about New Brunswick and paddle routes and
yep.
Wollastook and the Wollastook River and so on. I didn't get a chance to get out. We did. Talking to the family, everybody knows about this mine that's going in. They didn't understand. They knew about the mine. They knew about the planning. But they didn't understand. I said, you know, if the dike breaks, that's a whole river system that's going to be
kaputty. Like,
kaput. And I never thought about that. It's like, well, you got to think about this. It's mm-hmm. like the dikes aren't guaranteed not to and the levee breaks,
everything downhill.
Exactly. Yeah. So unfortunately I never got a chance. Every day was so busy, we're always doing something, so it didn't get a chance to get out on a canoe. I had planned a route, and but we just never got a chance to do it.
Shame.
So, did a lot of hiking. One of the hikes that I wanted to mention was, Fundy National Park. We did this hike, and, you know, you're doing a hike on a hot day, and it's like, oh, this is all downhill. You know what that means. All the way back, it's all uphill.
We live at the bottom now.
But what was neat on that hike, it was 28 degrees that day. And so we were in the shade most of the time, and it was down, 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 and then stairs down, and then more down. And so it was like, we're going down. How much farther can we go down? At the very, very bottom, there's a dried up river. It's only water in the river in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And anyways, like three quarters of the way down, we went through this narrow cut in rocks. So the kids, of course, the little buggers are a lot faster than us. And so Stella and Beckett were there, and they were sitting down on the wooden walkway at the bottom of this crevasse. And it's cool down here. It's cool. It's cool. It's like cool as in neat or cool as in cold. Cool as in cold. So we walked down, and you could feel it right up to your knees. It was cold from the knees down. And then we sat down on the boardwalk and cooled off. Ice cold air. The air was so cold. And I looked in some of the cracks and crevices on the sides. And I thought, oh, that's a weird white rock. So I poked at it and saw somebody else had poked at it. It's like, it was solid ice.
Really?
Not grainy ice. Solid ice in July.
Hmm.
In the rocks. And I squatted down and I could see it. It was like a 18-inch around hole. And it was just solid ice in the bottom of it. And so I get, that's why it's so cold down there. It's all the ice in the rocks. It was amazing. It's like, hey.
Just lay down, have
a snooze. If anybody
snooze.
Knew about that in the 1800s, it's like, hey, free refrigeration for the summer, right?
Right.
Very cool. But yeah, it was that was neat. So it was nice to get down to see family every time.
And now they're all happy you've left.
Yes. But what was neat from our perspective, and I thought about you a couple times, it's like, every time we're planning something, I'm planning around tide tables and tides this and tides that. It's like, this is exactly what we'd be doing if we were kayaking down there in the Bay of Fundy.
Yep.
So, yeah, it was constantly relearning the tide tables. I used to know them all the time. You had an idea of when the tides were, what the tides were at any given time of day. And but I had to refamiliarize because I haven't been regularly down there working tide tables in 20 years, right? So It was kind of neat for that aspect.
See, you got to get back into the swing of it.
And yeah.
Do more trips down that way with a couple of floaty things.
Exactly. But the pre-planning you'd have to do to get out on the water to know, because if you're on a an ebb tide where the tide is going out, that's a current going out, and that could, you know, suck you out in the middle of the Bay of Fundy. Or if it's an incoming tide, it's like, you know, it's just going to push you inland, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, well, people do, they run kayaks up the Shubenacadie area in Nova Scotia and Alma and area in New Brunswick. And there's those, that running, rolling wave that people run up the top of the Bay of Fundy. It's a lot of fun. It's pretty neat. I haven't done it myself, but I've seen a lot of people do it. And I was like, oh, look at that. And you can do rafting too. They're all, and there's, you know, jet boats. You can run the tides.
See, you need to plan just a paddling vacation.
Vacation in the Maritimes. Yes. Yeah. There's so many things to do. Like,
if family wants to come visit you
while
you're doing it, then they better be ready to join in.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. What would be neat, and I've seen photos and videos of other people doing it, is the flower pots, in near Alma, it's I can't even remember what it's called. Anyways, it's a area where the tides are like 30 feet,
mm-hmm.
whatever, top to bottom. Anyways, you walk the ocean floor at low tide and you come back 6 hours later and you kayak amongst that area at high tide.
Right.
So you get two different views of ocean floor bottom and hike, and then kayaking when the water's 30 feet higher.
It's Didn't like, one of those things fall over last year?
Your wife said something about that when I came in. It's like, huh, I don't know. I'll have to look into it now.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure one of those fell over.
We were there last year.
Maybe it was this past spring.
Yeah?
No, it could have been. I think it was the fall.
Hmm. I'll have to look into it now. Yeah. Now, two people have mentioned it to me.
Mm-hmm. Even riding the tidal bore and stuff like that.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. It would be neat.
Mm-hmm. Stand up and surf it in a canoe.
Yeah. And it's cold water. It's ocean water. So what's nice about that is on a hot day when you're down on the Bay of Fundy, you're not boiling hot because you're in cold water.
Yeah.
And if you're dressed for 28 degree weather and it's like, you know, 4, 5, 6 degree water, it's like, you better be careful.
Yep.
Yeah, got to prepare.
Cool off for a quick second, then get out.
Yes, yeah.
So you had a good time, saw a bunch of family.
Yeah, it was good.
They're happy to see you go. You're happy to be gone.
Yes.
Didn't ostracize anybody.
Yeah.
No family, you know, no family wars were
settled
or renewed.
And Stella turned 16 while we were down there.
Really?
So she had her sweet 16 birthday. We had her cake. And
All
my family were gathered around saying happy birthday to her. So that was nice. A little bit of
Christmas. Now comes all the attitude.
She's been pretty good so far.
Yeah, well,
she does have attitude.
She hasn't definitely been 16 has before.
Yes. But now she can drive.
Yeah. Man, I can remember when we started this podcast, she was like 6.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a while, eh? Whenever are you going to retire from this, anyways?
Never. Never. In the year 2052.
I'm not going to live that long.
Not with that attitude. Me, on the other hand, I did something a little further from home, but...
Did you?
Closer than you.
Oh, yes, you did.
Yeah, I went for a drive.
Yes.
So we've been talking about the lock and paddle for a while now. And the events are put on by Parks Canada. Peter Rowe being the main one at the Lift Lock. I've been to that one a couple times. Ottawa, I went for the first time last year. It's only been going a couple of years. I went for the last year for the first time. And Montreal, I've never been to.
I think this is their third year?
I think it's their third year, yeah. Now, I will say, out of all of this, and to me it's a bit of a negative thing, but when you look at all the advertising for the lock and paddle events,
it's
all geared towards Peterborough.
But it's where it started. It was the
really... I know, but there's everything's put on by Parks Canada.
Yeah.
So, like, you figure they're going to try to pump up each event.
They should pump up all of them.
And it doesn't really seem like they put out a couple little, hey, this weekend, lock and paddle in Montreal.
Yeah, they need to promote
it. But don't
it
forget
more.
The big one in Peterborough.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's a bit disappointing. I think if they put more effort into advertising these other ones. I mean, Ottawa was pretty decent last year.
How many people were there at Montreal?
Maybe a couple dozen boats.
Not a lot, eh?
No, no. It's a pretty cool, I'll get into it later. I like that lock, though. So, yeah, I decided to do a day trip to Montreal to check out their vent. John Brower, paddling buddy there, decided, you know what, hey, I'm interested in that as well. I went with John last year, met him and his dad in Ottawa.
Okay.
Hey, check out the Montreal event as well. So Saturday morning, I had the canoe on the truck, all my gear loaded up, head over and picked up John. Now, we weren't sure what the day was going to be like. So, we'd be held up with traffic take longer. We'd be in a hurry to get to the lock, that sort of thing. He threw his track kayak into the back of the truck just in case he had the option to use it.
Yep.
So that's the one that fits in like the bag the size of a hockey bag.
Yeah. How long has he had that?
A couple of years now.
Yeah?
Yep. He's one of the brand ambassadors for them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yep. I wish I'd known that. I didn't know he had it. I would ask him some questions about it last time I saw him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Nope. Asked a bunch of questions there. The track kayak is I call it a build-on-site kayak. Fits inside of a hockey bag. When you get to wherever you're going to be, you drag all the stuff out. Pull out the material, which is the shell of the whole thing.
Yeah.
You build, it's like a skeleton, the internal framework.
Mm-hmm.
You build that in two sections, the front and the back, and you shove that into the shell, the material. Yeah. And there's these big zipper-type thingies that close up on the top to tighten everything.
Make it tight, yeah.
Yeah. You have the cockpit frame around there, the ring around the cockpit. You put your seat in, and there's a rocker lever, so you can adjust the rocker on it while
you're
in there. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So just pulling up the rocker, the front and back come up.
Mm-hmm.
Then you release it; they lower.
More banana, cool. Less banana.
Yeah. And as he says, when he's raising and lowering, because you crank it,
yeah,
and you don't see his hand on this motion.
What you doing in there?
And it's right between the knee sort of thing. Dude, don't look at me. and then you go paddling for the day, and when you're done, you come back, you take it all apart, fold it back up, and put all... And the frame is, you know how when you get your tent poles out,
yep,
and they're all like connected with the elastic?
Yeah.
Same deal.
Hmm.
So he just pulls it out, just thicker tubes, and then stick them all together, and boom, there you have it. And then, you just unfold it all, take all the poles apart, fold them up, put them in the bag, zip up the bag, and roll on home.
Has he used it much?
A few times now, I'm
curious about is, after an extensive use, does it start to loosen up and get a little wonky wobbly, or is it...
Oh, I don't think he's had it. Hasn't had that long enough to use it that many times, no.
Hmm.
No.
I've always been curious about them. We've talked about them multiple times.
That sort of thing, yeah.
And I've always wanted to try it.
That and the Oru kayak, which is like basically Coroplast folded up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of... like you say, the track looks really good if you're into kayaking and you live in an apartment or limited space.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Storage space is limited.
Yeah. So it was about a five-hour drive to the parking lot. From my house and John's house. And it's just around the corner from the San Gabriel Lock on the Lachine Canal. We were one of the first ones there, so we got a close parking spot. Dude's just opening up the gate for the parking. And just pulls straight on in. Perfect timing, my friend. And the thing, my French is garbage.
Yeah, mine too.
Pretty much almost non-existent. And... So you look, and all of a sudden they launch into this big, hey, and you're just like, bonjour, is this where I park? Oh, yes, this is where you park.
Bonjour, je m'appelle Sean.
Comment ça va?
Oui, la bibliothèque.
Mon chien Pitou. And you know what? It's one of those things is it doesn't, I just don't have that know-how for other languages.
Yeah. Yeah.
As much as I've taken in school and try to pick things up, it just doesn't.
It's one of those things you need to use it to gain, earn the skill, right?
Yeah. You got to use it a lot. So yeah, we were one of the first ones there, so we got a pretty close parking spot. So I didn't have to portage the canoe too far. I did take the Nova Craft, the heavy old whitewater Nova Craft.
Well, you're gonna,
great boat though.
If you're going to bang and bump around, you don't need to take your nice one,
right? John, like I say, John took the track. So there was a spot for us to, right at the dock where we put in, there was enough room for him to build that.
Yeah.
And I had my boat there as well. And a few people came by while he was putting there, and they watched him put it together. Yeah. And some guy on a bike came by, and he was thinking about getting something. Then he saw John's track, and he's like, oh, that's his goal. This guy on the bike, his goal is to be able to pull something, a trailer behind his bike.
Okay.
And something like that would be perfect for it. Stick that in the trailer, go across Canada or Quebec, whatever you're doing, right? So they, you know, people stopped and asked him some questions, because that's the thing, is how long does it take you to put together?
Yeah.
About 15 minutes if nobody stops to talk to me.
Oh, sorry.
Right? It's like when I go to the campgrounds, winter camping.
Yeah.
And I've got the Aituk Cree.
Yeah.
Because it's not one of the more...
It's not a normal tent.
Normal tent that people have.
People
want to stop. Hey, what is look that? At that? And you got a wood floor? I could have it up in less than an hour if people would just, like, bugger off. You know, because you see people coming over, start asking questions. You just see Tracy like, yeah, it's going to be midnight.
Yeah.
So there are some people asking questions about it, and they all seem to really like the idea of being able to have a portable boat like that.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
We met up with a group from Maryland. They're part of a meetup group called Paddle Something, and I've seen them online. Basically, from what I get from them, they organize groups to go paddle at different spots, different events.
And this was their, this was their,
and they came up. Yeah. There was a few of them that said, hey, this is happening. Let's go up and check it out.
Hmm.
And, they come up. I don't know what they did.
It's a long way to drive just for a lock and paddle.
You mean like 5 hour drive on 5 hours home?
Maryland in one day? That close?
Yeah. But they wasn't, no, that was us.
Oh,
but they made a weekend or a few days out of it. Right. So there's probably a couple other places they hit along the way.
Yeah.
But that being, I guess, their goal. Paddle Something is the group. And they are, like I say, they organize different spots and events. And pretty cool if you don't want to paddle alone. Because there's that website, Meetup. Meetups.
When you, I heard you say it a couple times, and it's like, what did you forget the second word? Paddle something, you know,
right?
something. Paddle something.
Paddle something.
It's like, what is it? It's paddle something. It's like, I had to look at the notes. It's like, oh, it is something.
It is something. Yeah, it's the word something. Paddle something. So whether you paddle a kayak, a canoe, stand up paddleboard. So their logo on I have some of their stickers.
It's something.
Hang on. I got to reach way back here. I meant to have this here.
Is that a speeding ticket?
No. Well, I'll get to this. You just chill out, buddy. Holy.
Paddle something. He's paddling a dinosaur.
No. Chessie. Chessie is the Chesapeake Bay version of the Loch Ness Monster Nessie, or Canada's Ogopogo.
Mm-hmm.
So it's somebody on the back of Chessie.
Back in the day when people started seeing these things, like there must, I don't know what drugs or alcohol they were on.
So if you've got an hour, I can go through the conversation I had at work about Bigfoot and the Abominable Snowman.
It's like, what was going on back in the day?
Right? I don't know what they were smoking back in the day, but...
Something was definitely off.
There was something in the water, I'm telling you. It was big and long neck. Looked like a dinosaur with big fins. And there's somebody on it.
Yeah.
They were a really nice group of people that we chatted with them for a bit there. And paddlesomething.com if you want to check them out. Especially if you're in Maryland and you're looking for a meetup group sort of thing. Check these guys out. They came up and did that. And nice chit-chat with them and whatnot. So when John was done putting his boat together, and I was waiting and waiting and waiting, because, you know, all I had to do was take my canoe off the truck. We put the boats in the water and headed towards the dock. The launch point where we launched from was between two locks, and we noticed some people were heading to one lock. And I'm sitting there going, no, I think we're this. And you know, you get to that point with, I'm pretty sure.
Maybe I got it wrong.
Maybe I got it. Maybe everybody's looking at me going, what an idiot. So I get my little, my phone out and I'm looking at Google. Nope, we're going the right way. So, yeah. yeah, it just meant that they get some extra, you know, paddle time. They got some extra paddle time out of the deal.
There would have been another 80 people there if it wasn't for the fact that everybody went to the wrong lock.
Yeah, there was like 80 people. Well, there was only 40 in ours because the other 40 were in the other lock. Do we win something? When we got to the lock, however, there was only two other kayaks there. But no people.
No people.
No people in the kayaks inside the lock.
Were they just really tiny people?
Maybe. So the San Gabriel lock is cool because it has a dock inside.
Oh.
A dock in the lock. Tickety-tock, there's a dock in the lock. Three eggs and ham. Yeah, so and it goes up and down with the water level. It's mounted on the poles on the side. And as the water rises, the whole—I mean, this is a long, it's the entire length of the lock.
Yeah,
not just a little section.
Yeah,
so the whole thing goes up, then the whole thing goes down.
Yeah,
so if you're tied off on it, it's going up with your boat, and it's not like your boat's now hanging.
Yeah,
and at the one end of the lock, at the top, there's a set of metal stairs that comes all the way down to the dock.
Oh, okay.
And it's on a hinge up there.
Yeah.
But as it, and wheels at the bottom. So as the dock goes up, the bottom of the ladder, like the whole ladder goes up, but the bottom part stretches out farther along the dock.
Yeah.
So it's pretty easy climb when when the water's up.
Yeah.
But when the water's down, that's a pretty steep stairs.
Yeah.
Right?
That's like a lot of docks in Maritimes for on the Bay Fundy.
See, and when we were, when we did the Trent Severn, there was nothing like
that. No, they did. Yeah,
they're very, very lacking narrow for docks altogether along the Trent Severn.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That was a really cool lock. Yeah, I like that lock. They should make them all like that.
Very cool.
Yeah, so, you know, we had the whole lock to ourselves at that point because I guess the two people in the kayaks that were tied up had gone up to check out because on the top of each side of the dock of the lock is different booths. They set up some tents and stuff like that and what. So you, since it was early, zipped on up and they close it to regular traffic.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. The lock systems in that one section, they close it to the regular boat traffic for a few hours there. So we decided to play around and the lock for a bit, do some canoeing, doing some circles.
Some fishing.
No, just doing some spins and such. Yeah. And I found a can of Coke that had been there for a while, threw that in the back of the boat.
It was a full can or a
full can, full rusted can. unopened.
Well.
Found some bobbers, chip bags, so threw them. We always pick up the trash, right?
So where were these things at? Just floating in the water?
Just floating in the water.
Oh. Huh.
Yep. So picked them up, like I say, and then I found a tennis ball. I saw John sitting there all nice and quiet, looking around, enjoying the view, minding his own business.
Get him back
in
the head.
He made the perfect target. If you're not paying attention, then I've got a
tennis ball. A wet, soggy tennis ball.
You're getting hit. That turned into a game of catch at one point. Yeah. Then we decided we would try hitting the ball with our paddles. Again, the massive lock. Nobody but the two of us goobers in it, right?
Yeah.
And, decided we'd try using our paddles as baseball bats. For the record, we suck at canoe, kayak, baseball. After goofing around for a bit, we were joined by, in the lock by a few, because all of a sudden those people that went to the other one, you're looking down, and they're now all coming. So our fun was done.
Well, you could just make a team.
Right?
Team sport.
Quick, paddle the bases.
Nobody won, but everybody won.
So as we're sitting there, people are hanging onto the sides of the dock and the other side and that. We were on the shady side, not the dock side. Members of the Coast Guard Auxiliary were there. They came down to the dock and started calling the boats over one by one.
Yeah.
They were doing safety inspections.
Did you pass?
That ticket you thought was a ticket?
Yeah.
No. So what they do is they come down there, and there's a few of them there. And do you speak English or French? English. Okie dokie. They made sure you're wearing your PFD. I did notice there was a few boaters asked some questions, and the officers were pointing to different parts of their PFD, adjusting a couple of straps, that sort of stuff. There's a kayak in that rental place just up from the dock. So you can see there was a couple of their boats there. So they were saying, oh, yeah, you want to – that's not feeling right tight in there or loose in there or whatever. So that was really nice of them. They were making sure you had your safety kit, like the heaving line, waterproof flashlight, safety whistle. And they filled out your form saying, yeah, he's got everything. And
so you passed with flying colors?
Yeah. So now I've got this little souvenir thing from the Lachine Canal.
And if you didn't have all the everything, would they have given you a ticket?
I think they would have beaten you with a stick.
Or a paddle.
Or a paddle. Yeah, I got my life jacket. I've got my reboarding device.
What's a reboarding device?
I had one, though. I had my buoyant heaving line. Manual propelling device. I had two. I said, see, I've got the extra paddle. He goes, and I guess he misunderstood me. Well, I hope you have a paddle. I said, well, I've got two. And a sound signaling device or appliance. They just tick all this stuff off. First aid kit, communications, that sort of stuff. Planned route. All this little stuff there. And then on your canoe, they stick a sticker.
Nice. Inspection 2026.
Yeah. Pleasure Craft Safety Check. The Canadian Coast Guard Auxiliary Quebec Inc. 2026 sticker. So now, John's kayak, the track, they don't stick.
Oh, is it
the So they couldn't stick it.
Yeah.
Mine, they just peels it off and right in the side. I'm thinking, well, that's kind of rude. Now, I hope it comes off. Otherwise, I'm going to look like one of those cars going down the road with stickers from the last 30 years of your family vacations on the back. So, yeah, that was cool. That was really cool that they were doing that.
And you got an extra one from them?
This was John's. It didn't stick.
Oh, okay.
So I said, I'll take that from you. It didn't stick. So, yeah, I took it. Yeah, and then so they after everybody was in there, the couple dozen paddle craft were in there. They closed it up. They did a speech, both French and English, up top, talking about the lock system, the history of it, thanking for everybody for coming out, that sort of thing. They raised the water level and opened the lock so we could all paddle out the other side. It was rather violent water coming in that side. Like when we did the Trent Severn.
Yeah.
Nothing got that violent.
Oh, it was that bad, eh?
Yeah.
Because I remember just like, woo. When we did the Trent Severn, it was pretty rough a couple times with the water flow and the
Now, this one was pretty, but we survived, apparently.
Yeah.
John was holding on to the dock in my canoe for dear life. we paddled out, and we went up for a little bit. We chatted with a few people and other paddlers along the way. Everyone was having a great time. The number of bicycles and joggers along the canal, phenomenal. I was getting tired just watching them. Like, I'm exhausted. Why? You haven't paddled far. No, just watching all these people. And just people, so many people out just enjoying the day along the canal. It was really great to see. At one point, we saw four or five dragon boats come paddling past us.
Oh, cool. Right on.
We would see them later back in the lock when we were coming through the other way. Shout out to 22 Dragons Dragon Boat Club. If you live in the Montreal area and are interested in dragon boating, check out 22dragons.com, the number 22, dragons.com. We're in the, they made a little speech on the way back about Dragon, 22 Dragons, you know, being one of the first ones when they started revitalizing everything to be out there. And so everybody's, you know, clapping and that. And he goes, and the main guy is going, if you have any money that you want to pass off, 22dragons.com. And he's looking over, and I looked at him. If you have any money you want to drop off, paddlingadventuresradio.com. Yeah, apparently neither of us get money from either of us.
You give me 20, I'll give you 20.
But it was cool that they when we were paddling up, they sort of just came through and then just stopped for a couple minutes. They were talking and giving directions and that. And then all of a sudden they started and zoom, 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 off they went again.
Cool.
So, yeah, it was pretty cool to see that. That, you know, there's a lot of recreating going on in the canal section there. After paddling for a bit and enjoying our view of Montreal, we turned around, headed back to the lock, went through, tied up to the lock the other side, and we headed up. Because when you get through the lock, not only is there the dock inside, but there's one just past it. So we can get out, and then we headed up to the top of the lock to check stuff out. Ozero Solutions had a booth at the top. They were giving out info on self-service boat washing stations, and some info on invasive species. Do you remember that? Now, they didn't have one of the machines there, but they do have, he says, we do have them at multiple lakes in Quebec. Do you remember the one we saw when we came out from our Incomplete Angler's trip? The one at Opiango?
Yeah.
That's them. Oh. They had boats, the big ones. They had, that's what they put out, different lakes and stuff.
Oh.
So that was pretty cool to see.
Same company that we saw?
I don't know if it was the same company, the same machine.
Same machine.
Yeah, same machine. Yeah. Then Canoe Kayak Quebec was there talking about the network of paddling routes known as Route Bleue, or the Blue Road. Checked out the website, which is in French, but my browser will convert it to English.
Yeah.
So, La Route Bleue, LARUTEBLEUE.CA has a lot of stuff about the routes and all that and what they do. They're a network of safe and accessible paddling routes through Quebec. It helps you choose, plan, and live your outings with confidence, as they say. Site allows you to find a route, explore by regions, check out an interactive map. There's a section called Prepare for My Exit. And by exit, they mean outing. So preparing for your trip or whatever. The Blue Road is your starting point for a safe and enjoyable water adventure, regardless of your level. Section guides you through each stage of your preparation. Assess your level, choose a suitable route, plan your route, and gather the essential equipment. You'll find practical tools, lists of equipment, time calculators, and videos to better prepare you.
Oh, cool.
Finally, to paddle also means respecting your environment. Discover how to navigate responsibly, recognize fragile environments, and explore with a minimum of impact. Good preparation is the key to fully enjoy your exit to the water. There's a blog section with articles like paddling with your dog, dehydration, or commercial meals. So do you dehydrate your food, or do you just buy the freeze-dried commercial ones, right? The about section says the Blue Road is an enriching ecotourism experience recognized by the Ministry of Education as a national network. By improving and facilitating access to water bodies, all in an eco-friendly setting, La Route Bleue is a guarantee of safety and standardization of paddleable routes in Quebec. If you have the chance and you're thinking of paddling Quebec, like I say, La Route Bleue, BLEUE.CA. Check them out, and there's a lot of stuff on there. After that, we checked out a couple of the food vendors. John checked out one of the food vendors with his tummy. He's like, smell this. Like, yeah, smelled good, dude. Watched some different paddlers down, you know, from the top of the lock, looking down at the paddlers that were there before heading back to our boat and getting back on the water. Took our time paddling back and check a lot of graffiti everywhere. A street photographer would love it there.
It's good graffiti, is it?
There's some crap stuff.
Yeah.
But there's some really good stuff, some big stuff. I took some photos of some stuff in that and video. We did some photos and video of our boats in the lock before heading back to the takeout. Once out of the water, John quickly disassembled his track. I took my gear and canoe to the truck, loaded everything up, and headed on out. It was a hot day, but there was supposed to be some cloud cover. There wasn't. I guzzled a couple liters of water easy. Yep. And even still, got out of there feeling pretty dehydrated as we were driving away. Instead of going for dinner, we just stopped at a store, grabbed some cold drinks, like cold water and stuff, and started heading for home. We stopped later for a bite to eat and whatnot, feeling a lot more chipper at that point. It was a long day out. About 5 hours to get there, 5-ish hours on the water, 5 hours home. So
that's a long day.
Yeah, it was a long day, but I really hope they're able to grow the participation at this event.
Yes.
It's enjoyable. Yeah. It was a really nice place to paddle. You know, and like I say, I mean, there's a couple of spots that, especially if you're a photographer, you could stop and take like some city views. And I don't know if you saw my posting on our Facebook.
I did not.
Some of the city views, graffiti and stuff was pretty cool. Locks were cool.
Mm-hmm.
Just the general, so much activity along the side of the lock was pretty cool. We had a good time there.
That's awesome.
This weekend is Peterborough, this coming weekend. This is the second of the Lock and Paddle Triple Crown, as we've been calling it. we're going to that one Saturday, July 18th, 12 till 4 p.m., the Peterborough Lift Lock. Check out Parks Canada, parks.canada.ca for all the info, directions, parking, schedule, etc. Just Google Peterborough Lock and Paddle.
And the Ottawa Lock and Paddle is on their website, too.
And the Ottawa one is there, too. That's in August, August 15th. We'll be going to that one to complete the Triple Crown. But we'll be in Peterborough. Well, cool. I'll be in Peterborough this weekend.
Yeah.
Not sure about you because you probably have a honey-do list to do.
Yes, I got a lot of stuff to do.
And, so I'll be there. So if you see me, say hello. and while I was enjoying my time there, apparently not everybody else is having a good time because there are wildfires aplenty.
Yes. I was digging into that today, too. Mm-hmm. I assume you've already been looking at it because you had a lot of information sent back to me.
Officials have canceled all Boundary Waters canoe permits amid the surging wildfires. A historic heat wave and lightning sparked fires have triggered a full closure of the country's most iconic canoe wilderness. Forest Service officials have closed public access to the Boundary Waters due to surging wildfires across Minnesota. Decision is part of a 3.9 million acre closure across Superior National Forest due to the fires and the unusually hot and dry conditions. Because if there isn't a fire there, the hot and dry, all it takes is a spark.
Exactly.
This news was announced in a public release and didn't provide details on when the region is going to reopen. Some people are going to say all the way through the end of July, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Firefighters are saying that because of the high fire danger. This closure is about keeping people safe. Wildfires don't just threaten trees and campsites. They create dangerous smoke, unstable conditions, and rapidly shifting fire behavior that can trap visitors with little warning. In a wilderness as large and remote as the Boundary Waters, emergency response is challenging even on a normal day. During potential widespread wildfires, those risks increase significantly. So since July 7th, the area has experienced at least 19 wildfires. Wow. New fires are igniting every day, according to the USFS. Many in the recent fires were started by lightning, and forecasters are predicting more thunderstorms with little rain. Under these conditions, it isn't safe for people to travel, camp, or paddle in the wilderness. Rapid fire growth, thick smoke can make it hard to breathe, hard to see, difficult for firefighters to reach anyone who needs help. And we went on that Opiongo trip there coming out of the North End. And that, remember, we thought it was fine, but it was smoke
from the Quebec
fires there a couple years back.
That was that was bad. That was, and I remember waking up at like 2 or 3 a.m. and thinking, oh, the smoke's really thick. And I was like, I wonder if I should be worried.
Like there's a fire right there, but no, it was just so thick, right?
Yes, from so far away.
Mm-hmm. So not only is boundary waters on the U.S. closed, but the north side of that border would be Quetico.
Correct.
Quetico Provincial Park has closed Dawson Trail Campground, including campsites, roofed accommodations, all day use areas due to nearby forest fire activity, according to the park's alert page. Backcountry entry stations are also closed. Combined with the closure of the entire Boundary Waters Canoe Country is now shut on both sides of the border. No new visitors can enter the wilderness on either the American or Canadian side. Public safety is our top priority. We will reopen the park as soon as it is safe to do so. And the park says it will reassess July 18th. So this Saturday, we'll reassess everything and decide whether they're going to make further cancellations or not. And then another one, which moving pretty fast by the looks of things.
Yep.
Due to extreme forest fire conditions in and around Wabakimi Provincial Park, it is closed. Evacuation orders for the surrounding communities. They have closed the entire park until at least July 20th, and they will continue to assess the situation as it develops. The other thing with this closure, however, is there's part of a Via Rail route that goes through. It will not be operating through the park for the next several days. So if your train was supposed to go through the park, that train ain't going through the park.
I saw some video from a train. The engineers were trying to back up because they had cameras out and they were videoing out the windows of the train.
Mm-hmm.
And the train was completely surrounded by flames and they were just about to start backing up.
Wow.
So it's like, whoa. I checked out the, so when the Burt Reynolds Memorial River Run, when we did that in, I think, 2022. Anyways, we went through Wabakimi and that whole route that we did, most of it is on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the fires actually was passing through. So I can't remember the name of the lake, but the lake that our outfitter was on,
yep,
that lake was surrounded by fire. So I assume the outfitter was all, and the whole road up into Armstrong and so on was closed. Armstrong was a forced evacuation. So that whole area, like if you're to do Wabakimi next year, it's going to be different. It's going to be very different.
Yeah. Well, when we did Woodland Caribou, there were sections that had been burned over a couple of years previous.
Yeah.
And what a nerve going from all these lush forests to
sticks,
just burnt sticks. Everything was black at everywhere, but there was all that new life coming up though too.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
So, but there's dozens of fires across Canada, the United States right now. So if you are heading out on a canoe trip, double check, especially if they're like northern, out of the way wilderness spots. Double check that they're still open.
So one of the easiest ways to check, you can always go to the website of the park that you're going to, but one of the easiest ways to check to see where the fire's going, and there you can, you know how you can do traffic filters and satellite video, also on Google Maps, you can go to Street View and Satellite View and so on. You can also do a wildfire view. You just click on layers and there's a wildfire layer and it's constantly updated. So you can, right now there's a whole line of fires from Midwest all the way up through to Northern Ontario of just a whole row of fires that are just creeping across, heading from northwest down to southeast, and it's crawling its way down. So it's some pretty major fires going on this year, north and south of the border. So be prepared to look ahead, and if you're planning a route, you can see a lot of people online right now saying, hey, I'm looking for an alternate trip idea. Yeah. I've got vacation, but my current park is closed and I can't go into it.
Well, there's some people that are like, yeah, we got canceled and this, we came up with a plan B. Now all of a sudden that one's cancel.
I need a plan
Looking
C.
for a plan C. anybody got any ideas?
Yeah. Yeah, and so if you, you know, people do planning like a year out, this is what we're doing, you discuss it, you look at water levels, you can look at the conditions and so on, suddenly it's canceled. It's like, okay, I don't have time to plan a trip. We're going to have to throw it out into the ether there and ask people for ideas. Hey, you guys got any ideas? We are days away from our trip, and now we need an alternate plan, and we don't have time to plan our plan. We just need to just go.
Yeah. And how ticked off are you if you've never been able to get a permit to the Boundary Waters and you finally got one this
year?
Oh, yeah,
can you imagine?
And then, hey, congratulations on your permit, but you're not good.
That's so sad.
Like, so double check where you're going. Make sure there's no fires going on, because that'll definitely put a damper on your trip. Quick little thing here. Are the people operating kayaks or paddle boards required to wear life jackets in South Carolina? No.
It's weird that they don't have that rule, eh?
But perhaps the better question is, should they?
Yeah, exactly.
South Carolina Department of Natural Resources say a robust yes to that question.
Mm-hmm.
Wearing a life jacket and save your life, the agency says, when in describing state rules. Most boating fatalities in South Carolina are caused when people fall overboard. 80% of them are not wearing life jackets. South Carolina Department of Natural Resources say a robust yes. Wearing a life jacket can save your life. Most boating fatalities, it's exactly what you don't want to happen.
Yeah.
If you're going to fall over, oops.
Yeah.
But if you're wearing a life jacket.
Yeah, these are accidents. You can't plan for them. And so be prepared for a tipping or for an accident. And, you know, if you're going to fall out of the canoe or you tip the canoe and you strike yourself in the head with a gunwale as the whole canoe tips over and you go unconscious. Well, you can't swim when you're unconscious, but the life jacket will keep you afloat.
Kids under 12 have to wear them.
Mm-hmm.
But anybody else, it just has to be in your boat.
Yeah.
It can't be locked. It can't be in a bag or something. It's got to be in your boat. So you can tuck it, like throw it in front of you or something in your canoe or something like that, as long as. But if you fall over, a lot of good that does you.
Exactly.
Sitting on the floor of your canoe, right?
Mm-hmm.
South Carolina's law is on par with the majority of states. Few, such as Maine, Hawaii, and California, require life jackets for anyone operating any type of watercraft. South Carolina is not the only one that has that.
Exactly.
Lacking that rule sort of thing.
I've seen postings on, like, there was a sign. It was a popular canoeing, kayaking area. And it said, In the last so many years, 264 deaths. And then there's at the bottom, it says, fatalities, drowning fatalities with life jackets, zero. Drowning fatalities without life jackets, 264. It's like, oh, that sends a message right there, right?
Yeah. So, again, there's people that I shouldn't have to wear it. It's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's hot. It's
my right.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know.
You'll never win the argument.
No.
Never. Klamath River. We talked about that a whole lot the last few years because they were ripping out all the dams.
Yeah. We've covered this a lot.
It was really pretty cool. There's an award-winning film about kayaking the undammed Klamath. It is free to watch right now.
And it is good.
Film about the rebirth of the Klamath River just made its way to the communities that know the river the best. 30-minute film follows 28 indigenous youth aged 13 to 20 who paddled roughly 300 miles from the Klamath's headwaters to the Pacific Ocean over 30 days in 2025. They became the first people to run the entire river from source to sea since crews tore out the J.C. Boyle, Kopco 1, Kopco 2, and Iron Gate dams, largest dam removal project in American history. Producer Jesse Sears, a member of the Karuk tribe, spent 10 days filming alongside the expedition. Paddlers trained for years through the nonprofit Rios to Rivers, traveling as far as Chile to build whitewater skills before running rapids that had been buried under reservoirs for a century. Because, when all the water went down, those rapids, all the rocks and stuff in those rapids are still there.
Yep.
Film has already collected a 2026 National Headliner Award and racked up more than 240,000 views online. Screening also lands at a fitting moment for the river itself. Salmon returned to newly opened habitat last fall, and the Klamath River reopened to fishing July 1st for the first time since 2022. Anyone can watch the film for free on Oregon Public Broadcasting's website and YouTube channel. So just go to YouTube and search for Oregon Public Broadcasting website.
Yeah.
And I think it's like the third or fourth video in.
I searched and Klamath River Film, and it was the first the first search option that came up.
There you go. It's a good little thing to watch and pretty cool. So that's sort of, I will probably talk about it again, but that's sort of, we've been talking about this since they started planning ripping everything out.
And they go through, the kids are constantly talking through the video, and these kids have been planning for this for 3 years.
Yeah.
Like, there's 3 years of training, and wow, their whitewater skills are amazing.
Right?
And so one of the things, it's like, I never thought of doing this, but they got all their whitewater kayaks in a circle, and people will pop up out of their kayak and run the circle across the noses of this circle of kayaks, and then one kid fell into the water. The girl, she ran the whole loop and dropped right back inside her own kayak. It was like, that looks fun. If you can get, 20 of your best friends out in kayaks, but it was like, wow, that was amazing. So they had a lot of fun doing it, and their whitewater skills are amazing. They, like, all the roles that I saw, they were just playing and doing,
bomb fun.
Oh, they had a blast. Yeah. And it's a really good film. It's worth watching. It's take the time to find it. Klamath River Film. It's really good.
Cool.
It really shows the recovery of the Klamath River. And we talked at length on it about how they had already started procuring native plants for areas to
the grasses, reseed the plants,
and plant the muddy river bottom that's now above water. And so you can see the recovery on the way. And they remark each couple of the times when they pass by where the river, where there used to be a dam, and they pass through, and you can see the where it's been gouged out and the dam is gone, and they can just run the river through there. So it's pretty cool. They also did a few sections last year by raft to test the waters and to test the route, because you need an idea of what's there before you run a bunch of kids down. So they did it by raft last year just to see the conditions. It's a beautiful river. The fish are coming back. There's no algae spores because they always had these huge algae blooms and mucky green water, and you couldn't drink or swim in the waters. It's too dangerous because of the algae and the toxins and so on. But now the river's coming back to life. The fish are coming back. Salmon are spawning. It's amazing. It's an amazing recovery story. Very, very good.
Good. Definitely going to watch that one.
Yeah.
Everybody should. Then there was another video I sent. And you know what? Part of me is like, really? And the other part of me is like, how do I get one?
I know. I'm thinking, this is a winter project. I can build one of these.
Has anybody got a spare Grumman? Some parts of Canada you'll rarely hear someone use the phrase, whatever paddles your canoe, instead of the more usual, whatever floats your boat. And apparently, at least for one Swede, that's steam power. There's a YouTube video that gives a detailed tour of a canoe equipped with a small boiler and an outboard motor that has been converted to run using steam pressure by Kenneth Carlson. Canoe itself appears to be a Grumman of the Prospector type, wide in body to hold all the gear you'll need for an extended wilderness trips, or in this case, a small boiler. Amidships is the ideal place, as it won't affect the balance of the boat. Amidships is an odd place to put an outboard in the North American homeland of a canoe. If you aren't moving under your own power, it's more common to cut off the curved stern of the boat, mount an outboard to a newly made transom. Carlson's choice is to put the outboard off to one side, will be less maneuverable than a stern mount, but saves the need to modify the canoe, makes for much shorter steam lines. Shorter steam lines means less hose to potentially leak and scald the occupants, which is a bonus in my idea.
Yes.
as well as fewer losses, so you can't really argue with the trade-offs. Engine is an old two-stroke outboard that has been single steam cylinder retrofitted to it, along with a heat exchanger to warm up lake water with exhaust steam before it heads to the boiler. The water is filtered first, of course, but we do hope the new owner is diligent about cleaning the boiler. Doesn't look like super high pressure steam, but the vapor phase of water is always something to be respected. You can check out the video on the YouTube channel, Steam Canoe. It's a pretty cool looking
It's a neat unit.
I would do something like that if I had nothing better to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, even when he's out on the water, it's just like this sort of thing. Yeah. It kind of reminds me if I took one of my Alaskan Nyko stove with the pipe on top and put it in a Grumman canoe with steam lines coming up the side and a boiler filled with water on top.
Yeah, and you're talking it's a stove with a boiler in it, and you're going to need a Grumman because the last thing you need to do is melt a hole in the bottom of your fiberglass canoe or in the bottom of your Kevlar canoe or your bottom.
Well,
of your plastic
I like the
canoe.
One point where, and if you watch the video, you'll see if he's opening up the side. Well, look, there's the fire in there. Ooh, I better put more wood in.
Yes,
and he's grabbing wood, throwing it in, and you know what? It's something cool, right?
Yeah.
So, is what it is. He seems to be having fun with it, and as long as that's what he's doing, then so be it.
Very cool.
Timber rafting. Remember we went rafting in Japan there?
Yep.
On those big... So timber rafting, Zeteria, advanced an international UNESCO nomination.
Oh, okay.
July 2nd to 5th, July 2026, an international seminar at Alba Iulia, Romania... brought together institutional representatives, UNESCO experts, and delegations from Finland, France, Italy, and Romania to begin drafting a dossier aimed at extending the inscription of Zeteria, or timber rafting, to additional countries on the UNESCO representative list of the intangible cultural heritage. The autonomous province of Bolzano is actively involved operationally, while Italy has offered to act as a coordinating country. They got a deadline of March 31st, 2027 to complete the nomination dossier. The key outcomes of the seminar is the exchange of experiences among countries where timber rafting is already recognized, agreement to prepare a joint nomination dossier for international extension, commitment from Italy and the province of Bolzano to coordinate and support the process, and renewed emphasis on international cooperation to promote and safeguard their tradition. Why does this matter? Timber rafting is a historical practice that since the 15th century played a central role in the economic development of South Tyrol and the valleys along the Adige River. For centuries, the river was the main route for transporting timber and goods until the mid-19th century. UNESCO recognition helps protect and promote this intangible heritage while fostering transnational dialogue and safeguarding traditional practices. And we've come across this before where they do this sort of thing. But that's the same thing with Japan. Japan, before they started using it as a tourist thingy.
It was a way of life.
It was a way of life. They had the people taking those rafts, and they're massive rafts, too.
Yes.
Up and down with all the stuff until they put the roads in the 1900s. Implication for visitors and local communities, cultural enhancement, new preservation of promotion projects at local and international levels, cross-border cooperation, sharing best practices among communities involved in timber rafting, and tourism potential, greater visibility for routes and initiatives linked to the intangible heritage. Process will continue in the coming months with the technical working group activities. Those interested in following developments and participating in local initiatives should watch for announcements from the autonomous province of Bolzano and the irrelevant local authorities.
Cool.
So for more information, check out UNESCO Timber Rafting. There's a bunch of stuff on there. And yeah, it's pretty cool to, you know, like I say, if it was done, just because it was done, you know, like a couple hundred years ago, doesn't mean it isn't important to, I mean, it's important to how the country was built.
Yeah.
You know, whatever country that
culturally important.
Yeah.
Something that.
So it's got, it can't be forgotten.
Needs to be protected.
Yeah. And that's exactly what this is for. We'll end it on a big note here.
Yes.
Grand Canyon river rafting guy who aimed to become the first American woman to row across the Mid-Pacific solo has completed a record-breaking journey from California to Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. We've been following this off and on. We haven't talked to her about it till now.
Yep.
But yeah, we've been following this, and she's really good. She's posting stuff, and she's well planned, very well planned.
Oh yeah. Hundreds gathered to cheer on Kelsey Fendler as she pulled into the Honolulu Harbor on her 21-foot rowboat Lily after nearly a month and a half at sea. She launched from Monterey, California in May, set out to become the first American woman, youngest woman, and fastest woman to make more than 2,400-mile journey solo. Hundreds of thousands of people followed along on her journey on social media, where she shared highs, lows, quirks of her trek in videos taken as she bobbed alone on the vast ocean. Fendler appears to have broken both the previous woman's speed record as well as the men's speed record.
Yes.
According to records maintained by the Ocean Rowing Society International, which adjudicates ocean rowing achievements for Guinness World Records. The Rowing Society's online records showed Saturday morning that Fendler finished in just under 44 days, faster than the previous comparable female record holder, 86 days, or the male record holder's 52 days.
That's impressive.
44 days. Fendler's video diaries explain the logistics of her passage and survival on the ocean. She detailed challenges including blistered hands, struggle to sleep amid stiff winds, and the mental and physical struggle of coping with sometimes unfavorable currents and wind. She explained how she cooked, protected her skin from the sun, washed her clothes, made fresh water. Some videos, her voice cracked with emotion. Others, she poked fun at her own forehead, hat tan line, and joked about the importance of her caffeine pills. Fendler's website says she has been a professional raft guide since she was 18, spent the last 8 years leading trips along the Colorado River in the Grand Canyon. And she says, I just love boats in the middle of nowhere. In a recent video posted as she neared Oahu, she reflected on the meaning of her accomplishment and what she hoped others would take from it. In any part of this made at least one person feel a little bit more powerful in their own skin. I couldn't ask for anything else, and I'm happy, she said. Think about trying to find your own big, hard, scary thing. You might not think that you're strong enough to finish it right now, but you're definitely strong enough to start it. And you'll find everything else along the way. I'm going to go finish my big, hard, scary thing.
Good for her.
Good for her.
Congrats.
You can check out her website, urowkelsey, KELSEY.com, for more information on her journey, what she did, some videos, links and stuff like that. Check out her social media just to see the videos and see what it takes to do something like this, because, yeah, that's not my cup of tea, but kudos to those.
I'm not doing it.
kudos to those that do it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff out there I look at thinking, yeah, no, not
my not, my,
not my bag, man. But, hey, good on you for doing it.
That's awesome. Congrats to her.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite the achievement.
I'm sure she'll probably, now I wonder if she'll try the, because she's, there's the other one, the multiple person race. That's the California to Hawaii race.
Yes.
She's done that one, I think, as well. But this is a solo accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if she'll head out to the Atlantic next.
There you go.
Dun, 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 dun. That's all I got. You got anything else?
I've got nothing else to add myself.
Huh? Doing lots of canoe trip.
Planning
right now, and
yeah, I have to start packing.
Yeah, because you're going away again.
10 days.
Hmm. Good
yep.
times. Good times. Good times. Good times. You're heading west, young man.
Yes.
That'll
head
be
west,
exciting.
Young man. Head west.
We'll have to talk about that next week.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. Well, if you got nothing else, if you want to find out more about us, you can go to our website at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And you can stream or download all our episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Player FM, Podbean, Amazon Music, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com. And you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. And again, if anybody's heading to the Peterborough Lock and Paddle this weekend,
yes.
I'll have the blue Nova Craft and my old smiling face. Look for the beard. I'll be there. Yeah. Make sure you say hello.
Hello.
Again, I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.